On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Time On with Sam McClure.
For Master Builders Training Victoria. Short courses now available. Visit mdav.com.au.
9 minutes past six. Welcome to Time On. I'm Sam McClure here with you till 7 o'clock. And last night, well, you heard us talk to Craig Tiley off the back of the Burn Atomic audio coming through off Channel 10. It's created a bit of a storm and it's been continued today, started by breakfast with Gary and Tim. You heard it all continued with Jared Waitley this morning, and thus through the day, the plot has thickened with comments from Leighton Hewitt, one of our greatest ever tennis players, Leighton Hewitt, who is now, of course, Davis Cup captain. He was asked earlier today in his media conference ahead of the tie with Germany if he could foresee a Davis Cup future for Burn Atomic.
It's highly doubtful. You know, I think with the team camaraderie we have at the moment, it's as good as I've been a part of in a long time. And we fully believe, you know, the players that we've got here, we can go a long way. And last year we were bloody close to, you know, making a Davis Cup final and hosting France in the final. And, you know, I back these boys to hopefully go one step further this year. Oh, there's probably a lot more that plays out behind the scenes than what Bernie says publicly. So, you know, for me, yeah, he's made some mistakes and he'll be a long way back. Well, I think everyone knows he wouldn't help us right now. Pretty obvious. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of those kind of shows, but, you know, obviously a couple of boys have kept a close eye on it. Keeps them in good humour at night time, which is fun, something to talk about. But, yeah, it's strange. You know, you either want to be a tennis player or you don't. We've made a lot of approaches and steps, you know, as part of Tennis Australia. You know, we can't do any more. Believe me, the last 2 years has been hard work for a lot of people. We've bent over backwards to help Bernie in so many ways. And at the end of the day, you've got to want to help yourself as well. We can only hand out, you know, an olive branch, and you've got to be willing to take that. But, yeah, he's digging a big hole for himself that he may not be able to get out of. Yeah, obviously, I think he still wanted to play the Australian Open, so yeah, he went and tried to qualify, which was good on him. His ranking gets him into qualifying, so it's kind of pointless going around and him playing in qualies though if he's not committed to the sport. You know, he's wasting not only his time but everyone around him as well. So he's got to commit to the sport and do all the right things if he has any chance of coming back.
Strong comments there from Leighton Hewitt. Yes, he is a straight shooter, but he could have easily flat-batted those comments when he was asked the questions at the media conference today about Burn Atomic, about the Davis Cup. He's done it plenty of times before, Leighton Hewitt, but clearly wanted to have his say. One man that knows Leighton Hewitt and Burn Atomic very well is a man that has represented Australia in the semi-finals twice at Davis Cup level in 2015 and last year in 2017. He's also a two-time quarter-finalist at Grand Slams and a one-time semi-finalist back at the French Open in 2014. I speak of the recently retired Sam Groth. Hello, Sam.
Sam, how are you?
Very, very well. Sam, you know not only Burn Atomic very well, but you know Leighton very well, and you've just heard those comments. They were very strong. He clearly felt that, you know, he and Tennis Australia and the Davis Cup team needed to send a message. What have you made of it all in the last 48 hours?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, you know, in the role that Leighton's in, a lot of times you've got to play, as you said, a straight bat to a lot of questions. And I think a lot of people have done that with Bernie over a long period of time. And, you know, I think there's come a point when, you know, some stuff needs to be said that probably needs to be said. And obviously he felt like that was the time to say it now.
So, Sam, what is the time for you to say what now, I guess, is the question. You've watched Bernie for a long time. You would have spent a lot of time in the locker rooms with him at Grand Slams, at different tournaments, at Davis Cups. You know, what's happened?
Oh, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? He's definitely in a strange place, and I think, like a lot of people, you know, tuned in TV the last few nights just to sort of see where he was at and why he was doing, you know, this whole experience of a reality TV show when you're meant to still be pursuing a tennis career, I guess. And yeah. He's not in a good place. Yeah, it's just you know, without knowing the full in depth of what's going on with him right now, you know, you watch what he's talking about on TV, and I think it fully reflects on the stuff that he's probably dealing with in real life. And I'm not sure going, you know, off into the jungle to deal with it's the way to go about it. I think he's got some sort of deep seated issues that he needs to talk to someone with. And you know, whatever he's struggling with right now, I don't know if coming back on the tennis court though really is going to help that.
Sam, you're someone that's very well known as, you know, you would bleed for the green and gold when it comes to playing for Australia, and in a similar mould to one of your good mates in Leighton Hewitt. Do you think Bernard's in that mould?
To be honest, I think Bernie, when he played Davis Cup, he had a very good record, and a lot of that was during times in the lower sort of Group 1 division when we dropped off for a little while. I think when push came to shove and we had a real chance to do well over the last few years, Bernard let a few other things get in the way of him representing his country and probably giving us a chance or helping us sort of, you know, get to a final or possibly win the Davis Cup. And you know, I think that's the thing with the group of guys now, that everyone's prepared to sacrifice sort of individual success for, you know, team goal at the moment. Obviously, Davis Cup takes weeks out of schedule and makes it tough to sort of play weeks before and after Davis Cup ties. So it is sort of a big commitment. And I think that's the thing now. We've got a group of guys that want to do that. And obviously, Bernard, over the last sort of year or 2 years, sort of taking himself out of that group. And, you know, I think it's going to be hard for him to get himself back in there.
Do you think he can get back in, or is it too far now?
Oh, I think he's got to get his results up first. And then I think he's probably got to call a few members of the team, not just Leighton and the support staff, but I think a few actual guys in the team as well, and say, look, guys, I'm sorry. I've, you know, probably let you guys down over the time and put other things ahead of, I guess, team success.
Sam, we appreciate your time here on Time On. Good luck. You know, well done on your amazing career. And I know it was a sad way to finish with Leighton and you wanted to go further into the tournament. It was still a fantastic tournament. We've loved to watch you play for a number of years now. We wish you all the best in the future.
Oh, thanks, mate. I really appreciate it.
Sam Groth there, very generous with his time. He makes a really interesting point, does Sam, just halfway through that interview where he said Bernie's in a bad place and he needs to sit down and talk through a lot of the issues that he has. And I think this is the next element of the story, and that's why we go to Wayne Schwoss, who's a great friend of this station. He's a mental health advocate from Pucker Up, and he's also a 282-game superstar with both Sydney and North Melbourne. Wayne, good evening.
Afternoon, Sam. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for joining us. Wayne, you know this situation, you know, better than anyone, both in the sense of, you know, professional sport and also in mental health. And I think one of the elements that's been lost here is the question of, has it all gone too far? I mean, we've had Pat Rafter, Craig Tiley, Leighton Hewitt, you know, Sam Groth as well, who are all speaking their mind and all speaking very honestly. And a lot of the questions is about, you know, can Bernie get back? Are we asking the wrong question?
Well, I guess right or wrong questions, I'm not sure if that's the right way to look at it, Sam. The thing that I'm really concerned about here is Bernie's unaware of all of the periphery conversations going on. So if and when he decides to finally come out of that experience, then he'll be bombarded with a lot of the things that currently he's unaware of. And, you know, the thing that I keep thinking about, Sam, is what's the role of management, his management? I'm led to believe, I don't know them, but I'm led to believe they're based in America.
CAA, yeah, Creative Artists Agency, who we have tried to contact.
So, I mean, my first question is, and I think if you look at Brendan Favola, who's a great example of that experience allowed him to reinvent himself. But by that stage, Fev's own story was a well-documented public story. We all knew his trials and tribulations. And it was a great opportunity for Fev to go in there and show another side of himself. And that worked exceptionally well for him and his ability to, you know, effectively create a new career on radio. Whereas Bernie, we don't know a lot about Bernie. And the thing that really concerns me a lot here is that a lot of people are having a lot of things to say. Does that commentary and those opinions and those thoughts help Bernie in any way? And that's the thing that I think we need to be really careful of. It's okay to have an opinion. But as Sam said before, unless we know the true story about what's going on in Bernie's life, sometimes we've got to be careful that we don't contribute to any further negativity or negative impact on the individual without knowing the circumstances.
It's just hard to know exactly where that line is, Wayne, isn't it?
Well, I might be a bit different. I might be a bit different here, Sam, but I think if we don't know the full facts, then we need to reserve our judgment. Clearly, he's a young man who you would assume has some things going on in his life which are causing him some concern. The last thing that I or anybody should be doing is potentially contributing to that situation in any way, shape or form. So if we're in any doubt, my advice would be to reserve our judgment and make informed comments once we know more information.
And clearly, given that, Schwatter, the best thing for Bernie to do would not be on a reality TV show where he's talking about all this sort of stuff on a nightly basis.
Look, it's hard to comment on this, Sam, but I come back to the management, I come back to the role of family or people that have an influence in Bernie day-to-day life which help him make decisions.
Yep.
This is a surreal environment to put yourself in. It's a produced product. There's 24 hours of vision, but the people that make the show will cut up the show according to what they think will get the greatest interest and the viewers watching. And I get that. But I think the people that help Bernie make these decisions, I'd like to think that they considered his emotional well-being before they made a decision. Putting money aside, and I don't think money's the issue, and I don't believe that money would be the motivating factor for him to want to do that. But I think above all else, he's a young man that's been, you're thrust into a situation where you've got to grow up really quickly and a lot of responsibility, a lot of pressure. And my overriding question would be, is this going to help Bernie with his current situation? If the answer was no or it was doubtful, there is no way I would have advised him to do the show.
So just to conclude on that, Wayne, you're pretty strong on the fact that without knowing the full facts, and I understand that, you think he's been ill-advised.
If I was to put myself in that situation and with my own experience and I was advised to go onto that show and that decision overrid my mental health and my emotional well-being, then I would absolutely say it's poorly advised.
Mm. Yep, I think that's very well said and I agree. Hey, Wayne, you do magnificent work with puckerup.com. Please visit that website for more information on mental health. We appreciate your time here on Time On Tonight.
Thanks, Sam, and well done on the new show.
Thanks, Wayne. Wayne Schwoss there, of course, a legend of the North Melbourne and the Sydney Footy Clubs. 282 combined games with them and now doing fantastic work in the mental health space. And he speaks so eloquently and it's hard to disagree. You know, at what point has it all gone too far? And everyone will be tuning in to Channel 10 at 7:30 when I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here starts. It's been advertised like it's the biggest episode that the station's ever seen. And, you know, that's their right. Once they pay someone and they sign a contract, that is their right. But you've just got to wonder, having watched him on the show, having seen him slide down the rankings to the mid-160s, and I know that every time we talk about it, the phones light up, you've just got to wonder, at what point has it gone too far? And I think Wayne's point about his agency, and it's Matthew Fawcett that we've tried to contact at CAA Sports, which stands for Creative Artist Agency. They specialise mainly in people in Hollywood. They're based out of the United States and they're advising Bernard Tomic at the moment.
He's not in a good place here. It's just without knowing the full in depth of what's going on with him right now, you watch what he's talking about on TV and I think it fully reflects on the stuff that he's probably dealing with in real life, and I'm not sure going off into the jungle to deal with it's the way to go about it. I think he's got some sort of deep-seated issues that he needs to talk to someone with, and whatever he's struggling with right now, I don't know if coming back on the tennis court though really is going to help that.
28 minutes past 6 here on Time On. Strong words there from Sam Groth, a mate who's played Davis Cup tennis alongside Bernard Tomic and just called into his career. Sam Groth, that is. This is Time On. Thanks to Master Builders Training Victoria. Short courses now available. Visit mbav.com.au. 9429 1116 is the number. Michael's in Caroline Springs wants to talk Bernard Tomic. Hello, Michael.
Okay, Sam, how are you?
Good, thank you, mate.
I was in Paris a couple of years ago and I was walking down Champs-Élysées, and I saw this excited young man bubbling along, come out of a hotel and almost bowl a couple of people over as he went towards a couple of friends, and it was Bernard Tomic. I noticed it. I thought, oh, it's Bernard Tomic. And I was really amazed when I saw his body language at that time to read in the paper the next day and on my phone that he'd actually lost his match that day. And this is before his slide. But I thought, gee, this is a guy who's just been knocked out in round one when he was actually still, up in the rankings of the French Open. But a couple of hours later, it's like, he just looked like a young, excited tourist. And I thought, I don't know, it's a really strange reaction to the fact that he's just been knocked out of the French Open.
Yeah, and Michael, that's the exact reason, or one of the exact reasons, why people and Australians have a problem with Bernard Tomic. It's the attitude. And a lot of other people on the other side, and this is why media and radio is great, because everyone has a differing opinion. And a lot of people, even on Jared Waitley, were ringing up this morning saying that, it's his God-given right to play for the money. If that's what his motivation is, then he doesn't have to be motivated by anything else, because it's an individual sport. It's a fascinating situation. Dave's in Melton, wants to speak Bernie. Hello, Dave.
G'day, Sam. How are you?
Good, thank you, mate.
Yeah, mate. For me, Bernie, he seems he's burnt out on life. He's sick of people giving him advice left, right and centre, and he's jacking up, and people should mind their own business and leave him alone and worry about their own lives.
So you think that's how he feels? Do you think people should leave him alone, Dave?
Mate, when you got your family saying one thing, then you got your mates, then you got your management, then you got Tennis Australia, every head and there giving advice. Like, enough's enough, mate. Leave him alone. Like, how many people can you cop advice from? You know what it's like. Like, if you get advice from people come up and say, Sam, you should do this. And then someone else comes up saying, ah, Sam, you should do that. And you got hundreds of people coming up to you saying the same thing. You jack up, mate. You had enough. Like, he's telling you to leave him alone. Not in those words. But, you know, he's happy. He's got money. He does what he wants. Leave him alone, mate, you know?
And that's what we just see from our last two callers. Absolutely, completely opposing views. And absolutely fair enough, Dave and Melton. Darren's in Mill Park. Hello, Darren.
G'day, Sam. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
Listen, mate, I understand it's a bit of a story, but I just think it's time we all moved on. You know, I think Bernie's a bit like a fire. You keep giving it oxygen. You know, he goes on a reality show. He gets all the publicity that he wants. I think everybody just moves on. You know, a great story this morning was Jason Day. Won a fantastic golf tournament, doing a lot over there for charity. You know, these are the blokes that I think we should be concentrating on.
Yeah, he's a fantastic story. And Darren, we will move on. And Jason Day was one of those brilliant stories. In the middle of the night, Australian time, he needed 5 playoff holes the day before and only needed 1 going in. That approach shot after laying up on 18, the backspin he got on that ball. And, you know, Noren went into the water, which was unlucky. It was a fantastic result for Jason Day. And what's it, his first win since 2016, the best part of 18 months, I think. So fantastic work, Jason Day. We'll move on to a couple of other headlines. The two big announcements today. One was, of course, the T20 World Cup coming to Australia in 2020. And we'll speak to the tournament after the next break. But the other one was the launch of AFLW season number 2. We know what a raging success the first one was. We know that there was a lockout in game 1, Carlton Collingwood at Icon Park. And I caught up with Gillon McLachlan this afternoon, and it sounds like there is a possibility that history could repeat itself.
Gil, the story last year was about the crowds and the support for AFLW, and it's almost increasing exponentially. The support here today.
Yeah, it's been a great launch today. We know more now. Last year we had no idea. As I said, the first opening game was scheduled to be at the Holden Centre. We moved that to Icon Park, and in the end it wasn't big enough. We've got a bit more certainty. We're confident with a strong crowd on Friday night. It'll be a big game, a crowd at Norwood Oval on Saturday night in Adelaide, playing around the country. And then, you know, obviously we've already sold 38,000 tickets to the game in Perth the following weekend. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement and the start's going to be strong.
Do we have any idea about crowd on Friday night? Are you anticipating another lockout? Well, not to address fans again?
I asked the team yesterday, and we can really only go on social stuff and on you know, those sorts of indicators because it's not ticketed, and there's a feeling that on social media it's as strong as last year. I don't know what that means, but I'm confident there's going to be a really good crowd there, and hopefully we'll see everyone there on Friday night.
So you'll be there on Friday?
I'll be there on Friday night, yeah. I'm hoping I'm not having to walk out again.
Are you secretly hoping you are?
But both, probably. Yeah.
And what about 38,000 in Perth? I mean, that is...
Yeah. So I think
your expectations as well.
Yeah, it is. I'm confident we're going to push 50,000 for that game, which will be great. It'd be great to break the record. The record ever for a women's sport event of any kind outside the Olympics is 41,000, and hopefully we beat that, and that'd be amazing.
And what about just the league generally? You're like you said earlier, just saying you didn't know a lot about it last year. Is there still quite a lot you don't know? Like, do you think we'll look back in 5, 10, 20 years' time and say, wow, how are we doing things like that years 1, 2 and 3?
Of course we will. Yeah. We're learning all the time. There's going to be things we can do better in every area. You know, speaking to the captains and other people, the athletes are sort of the number, they feel they're improved their football and their strength and their conditioning's improved about 30%. I think we're going to see improved football. I think there's going to be new players in the league. I think that the integration of the women's teams with the broader club will be better. I think we'll know better about managing venues. I think game style will change. There's other partners coming on board. I think the flow on into the community will do a better job of managing the facilities challenges. So, you know, if we sit in 5 years' time, I reckon it'll look fundamentally different. No, in the mere fact that there'll be guaranteed in 5 years' time there's going to be 14 clubs playing and not eight will be, that's known, and that'll mean we look completely different. Maybe we'll have 18 teams in 5 years. I don't know. We're guaranteed to have 14. So it's going to keep looking different. And our challenge is, as I said, to keep investing in the right places, both at the base to ensure the growth and the elite to make sure it's the competition we all want.
You got a favourite player going into this season?
I know Daisy well and love Daisy, and I think Erin Phillips is just amazing what she's done. They're the two that stand out the most.
Gillon McLachlan there a little earlier caught up with him. Daisy Pearce, one of his favourite players, along with Erin Phillips. Of course, Daisy Pearce joining our station. She's going to have an hour during the week. She's going to have a spot on Jared Waitley and also a spot on Gary and Tim. Some headlines to come out of that. A lockout is another big possibility. 24,000 is the capacity of Icon Park. We've got Carlton Collingwood Friday night. Is the lockout something that you want? I mean, it sounds great for the sport, but if you're heading along, I would assume that you would want to know if you can get in or not. I mean, that's just a question that definitely pricks up for mine. And the other headline to come out of what Gillon McLachlan said in that interview is that, you know, he wouldn't rule out having 18 clubs in 5 years' time. We're going to have, what is it, 10 by next year and then 14 by 2020. He's not ruling out 18 in 5 years' time. The texts are absolutely flooding through, particularly around Bernard Tomic. Genuinely good luck to him if he can leave his work and or enjoy the spoils. I wish I could switch off so easily. Another text reads, what Bernie is not thinking about is soon the sponsors in the tennis world is going to walk away from him. Then the money will dry up. What does he do then? This is where he needs advice from people close to him and not from a management group who will focus on where's the next buck to be made. And once he's cooked, they'll get rid of him. Interesting text from Anonymous there. And Marcus, just on Gillon McLachlan and AFLW, has texted in. Marcus has said, as a father of two girls, I'm rapt that they have a pathway for them if they choose. In my opinion, whether or not AFLW works will be determined by if people want to pay to attend matches. Don't forget, nobody's paid to attend a match yet. Jury is out. Interesting text there from Marcus. You are right in the sense there's no tickets on Friday night. I know that people were a bit confused when it came out today that there are 38,000 tickets sold for the game at Optus Stadium, the new Perth Stadium, when Fremantle take on Collingwood in round two. It's a $2 donation, and they just want to know, because it's a new stadium, there's transport to be had and, you know, hospitality as well. It's all brand new. They want to get a pretty good idea of what the crowd's going to be. A $2 donation for each of the 38,000. So what, got the best part of 75 grand that's already been donated to charity, which is, of course, a very good thing. Quickly, before we go to the break, Scott Selwood in doubt for round one after undergoing ankle surgery last night. What does that do for Geelong's depth? Gary and Tim were talking and having a passionate debate this morning just after 7 o'clock about whether Geelong should be premiership favourites or not. He's going to be out for at least 6 weeks, potentially longer.
It's an amazing feeling, you know, to finally come home and, you know, to join Neil Harris, David Livermore and all the lads. It's going to be so special. I can't wait to greet the fans, meet my new teammates, but you know, I think it's just one of those things that's meant to be. It's hard to put into words because I'm still taking it in now, walking out. You know, first thing I wanted to do when I was with Neil was to walk on the pitch, walk through the tunnel and have that feeling again that brings back so many memories. But then once you know, cross that white line and touch the pitch, it brings a nervous sensation that that I had when I was 16 years old when I first signed here. So I'm really happy. You know, I've had a great career as a footballer, but to come here now, this stage of my career with so much at stake, coming here, want to do well, eyes on a World Cup as well. It's such a great place to be professionally. The environment, it's familiar, and you know, not much has really changed, which is you know, surprising because it's just nice to come back in this environment where I used to be as a kid.
14 minutes to 7 here on Time On, the voice, of course, of Tim Cahill. Back to where it all started for the great Timmy Cahill at Millwall, of course. Going back to Millwall and still attempting to represent Australia in the 2018 World Cup in Russia. He's going to be a vital member of the squad, whether it's off the bench or not. Doesn't matter his age. That man knows where the goals are. Speaking of veterans, Brad Hodge. Well, he's created a few headlines before. Hodgie, and he's done so 4 or 5 hours ago, tweeting, just completed final training session before we head to Adelaide. Could be my time to turn back the clock and get up the order for the Renegades against my old club, the Strikers. Time to turn it on for some old fans. Cheeky from Hodgie, but that's the way he is. And one man who would know better than anyone is his coach. And I speak, of course, of Andrew McDonald, the coach of the Renegades. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, how are you going?
I'm good. Andrew, surely Hodgie is just being cheeky. He's not actually going to play and get out of the hospital bed.
He's zero chance of playing on Friday night, so I can go early with that one. But he's recovering. He's had a pretty rough sort of 7 days, to be honest. And he'll be in recovery mode. We're hoping that he may be able to travel over in his coaching capacity to help out in Adelaide on the bench. But he won't be playing. And very cheeky, I found out, obviously, doing a Channel 10 interview around the fact that he had tweeted that. So, that's Twitter for you.
Yeah, he's had an appendectomy, and he's had an infection after that, which is nasty. So clearly he's not going to be right. Hey, Andrew, how is the rest of the squad sort of shaping up ahead of the semi-final on Friday?
Yeah, shaping up well. We lose Kane Richardson to international duties, but we get Cameron White back from one-day international duty. So obviously Richo in the T20 international side and Cameron coming back from the one-day 50-over side. So one in, one out. And the rest of the guys are fit and healthy. And we'll have pretty much a full list to choose from besides Hodgie and Richo come Friday night.
I know, Andrew, that everyone wants to represent their country and Cameron White has done so on a number of occasions. But I mean, selfishly, from your perspective, does a small stint like that going out of T20 cricket and going into the one-day squad have the potential to mess with his form?
I don't really think it's got the potential to mess with his form. What it has the potential to do is obviously mess with our team dynamic with a lot of moving parts. And every team's had to deal with that at some stage during this tournament. And the strikers potentially have to deal with that at this time of the tournament with a few big name players going out of their side for T20 international duty. So I don't think it'll affect his form. Is it ideal, the chopping and changing? Probably not, but it's just part of the scheduling. And we know that's going to happen pre-tournament. And that really comes down to the art of the list and squad that you choose. You've got to have some backup options if your players are lucky enough to get picked for international duties, which is what they really aspire to do, and we don't want to really change that.
Andrew McDonald joining us on Time On, the coach of the Renegades. They play the Strikers, of course, semi-final time on Friday. You can catch it all live on Channel 10. Andrew, what about the Strikers? We had Glenn Maxwell on this show last week. He was talking about, they are playing new T20 cricket. They're not necessarily focusing on the depth of their batting, but they have so many options with the ball that they can always get you out for a low total.
Yeah, they've gone and with, six batters and five frontline bowlers, with Nessa batting at seven,
yeah.
Who can bat a little bit, but essentially is a bowler. So heavily relying on their top order. Billy Stanlake's been outstanding for them with the ball. Ben Lachlan, Rashid Khan, Peter Siddle, probably a find. Obviously, we lost him in the off-season to the Strikers from the Renegades. He's had a fantastic season as well. So they have a bit of a shift now. Billy Stanlake goes out. I think that's obviously a big out for them. I presume Wes Agar will come in. And then at the top of the order, they've got a bit of shuffling to do as well with Alex Carey going out and Travis Head, who played against us last time. But they're probably one of the informed teams, or not probably one of the informed teams. They are along with the first scorches. So they're going to be tough to beat on their home patch. So, we'd probably go there as underdogs and look to cause a bit of an upset.
Happy to be the underdogs, I would assume, though.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, does it? I suppose what you go there as, it's just about getting the job done. And, we're confident that we had that sort of mid-season shuffle with the Australian selection. We've found a little bit of continuity and we've got our balance back. And it's a different balance to what we started out at the start of the tournament with. So we've had to sort of shuffle the deck, so to speak. And we feel as though we've found a bit of a winning combination in the back end of the season. So hopefully that bodes well. It's an improved fielding unit with the selections that we've made. So we feel as though we've got fielding under control and the batting and bowling dynamics working well together. So hopefully that holds up under pressure in a big game.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. You found a magnificent blend there. And let's all hope when we wake up on Saturday morning or even before that, we hope that the Renegades will be in the big final come a victory over the Strikers. Andrew McDonald, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Andrew McDonald, the coach of the Melbourne Renegades, their big semi-final against the Adelaide Strikers. It is Friday night and it is a massive game. This is Time On, thanks to Master Builders Training Victoria. Short course is now available. Visit mbav.com.au. Some late views on the news, please. 9429 1116. 0433 98 1116. Is there something we've missed that we should have been talking about in this hour? Let us know your thoughts.
Do you have an active conversation going with Bogut?
Yes. No, he's great. He's very active, and as you know, he's very active on social media. Yeah. He's very active in all aspects of the game, and we have a conversation with him, and we wish him to have as long a career as possible in the NBA. And if he's still able and willing, we'd love to see him back in the NBA.
Coming up to the 7 o'clock news, that was the voice of NBL boss Larry Kesselman with Jared Waitley, of course. Gee, if Gary Lyon and Tim Watson aren't getting the big names in sport, then it will be got by Jared Waitley. Those two shows working absolutely beautifully, one after the other here on 1116 SCN. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Kesselman obviously wants Bogut to end his career here. Bogut has said before that he wants to make it to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics if his body does hold up. It would make the 2019-2020 NBL season a really good fit for all parties, I dare say. Hey, on the text, 0433 98 11 16, Tim from Grovedale has just messaged in. Travelled up for Geelong last year with my daughter to face the lockout. This is, of course, about the AFLW. Daughter was extremely disappointed. Long way to go to be turned away. It would be good to know if it's worth travelling up this year. Tim, you raise a particularly good point. And look, I think it's absolutely fabulous for the game that the AFL isn't charging tickets. They obviously want to get as many people as they can to witness this league as it, you know, still finds its feet in its second year. But it's a really good point because people want to know if they're going to be able to get in. And I understand that the AFL say get there as early as possible. It's 7:45 and you can listen to it, by the way, here on 1116 SEN. But you know, despite the fact that people can come early, you've got people like Tim from Grovedale who come up with his daughter all the way from Grovedale, and it's a decent drive, and they find that they get turned away because, you know, there are no seats left. Well, I think potentially after this year, we're going to have to start looking at tickets, even if it's 50 cents each or a dollar each, just so people know if it's sold out, it's sold out. There's a live site, by the way, Tim, the AFL tell us. We heard from Gillon McLaughlin a little earlier. If you do get turned away, they've actually got a live site out the front of the game, a massive screen, some entertainment as well. I know it's not the same as sitting in there, but look, if that's the worst thing that's happening in AFLW, that we're turning people away because the crowds are too big, well, it's a pretty good thing. Another big edition of Time On. Make sure you listen to Sporting Capital next with Jack Everin, who's doing an unbelievable job. As for me, I'll see you right back here, 6 o'clock tomorrow.